time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, and that's Rob B. Oh, Rob R., I'm sorry.
My name is Rob, and I'm an addict. First of all, I'd like to thank my higher power for getting me here safely. Thank the Chesapeake and Potomac region. In this year's area, hosting it also, for taking a Narcotics Anonymous risk on me. You know, addict like me. You know, I got a lot of friends in here that know me, right? And I sat up here and I had to go to the bathroom and I was contemplating, should I go or should I sit? You know, and fun doing that act, somebody in the bathroom said, God's shaking the piss, the truth out of you, excuse me. And, you know, so the only thing left is the truth, right? I got rid of that other stuff. But, you know, my clean date is July 10th, 1990. And my home group actually right now is the Gut Bucket out in Greenbelt. Right. And I'm in service in East of the River and a lot of the different meetings around there. And, you know, my road hasn't been real smooth, you know, because I really think I got the answer. You know what I mean? I got the answer to cancer, you know, and I know exactly how Narcotics Anonymous should be. You know, the title of this workshop is The Consequences of Our Actions, which is really the fourth tradition. Right. You know, this year they didn't want to say a tradition meeting because people would have probably been able to get a seat. Right. So they put topics on it so everyone wouldn't know. But some of us know, you know. And at first I said I didn't have any experience, but I got a lot of experience when it comes to the consequences of my actions. You know, through a lot of writing, a lot of fellowshipping, a lot of different situations, talking to my sponsor, you know, I've learned a lot of things about me. You know, if I sit here and say, going on 14 years clean, that I know me real well, I'm going to tell you what, every time I think I got the answer, the questions get changed. Every time. You know what I mean? And there's more work to be done. And then I'll think I worked on something, but I really worked on the situation. You know, because it'll pop its head up in another area, and I'll be like, well, I thought I worked on that. No, I worked on that situation. You know, right now, a big thing with me is integrity. My integrity, not what somebody else think about me. You know, when nobody else is around, what I think about myself. And that's what I'm striving real hard on for the last year is integrity. I need that in my life. Right now, I need to feel good about me. You know, I'm originally from Philly, right? And I've been in the Washington, D.C. area since 88. I actually came down here in 70, Washington in 75 and went to college down here, right? And my drug of choice was more. Crack did not run me into Narcotics Anonymous. It probably was the first time I broke that window in the neighborhood and got away with it. Because I'm a true believer about attitudes and behaviors. You know, I really don't want to be restored to the guy I was before I start using. Because that's the guy who decided to use. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be who I should have been if I'd have stayed on the straight and narrow. I want to be who I am today from the experiences that I had to get me to this point, to want to worry about my integrity, worry about how I feel about me, how I view me. You know, it's real important right now. It's real important to me. So I do the things and I put myself in position to receive the blessings. Because I'm a true believer. If you don't put yourself in position, you definitely won't receive the blessings. You know what I mean? We can talk it. We can read about it. We can quote it, give up the pages. But am I living it? Am I truly living it when nobody else is around? When nobody can see me? When I'm in Boston last week on a business trip? You know what I mean? When nobody else was around, how am I living? You know? And more times than others, I do okay. And then sometimes, you know, I want what I want when I want it. You know, powerlessness, right? Knowing what destruction and despair lies behind my actions, but do them anyway. And say, I'll deal with the pain because it's familiar. I've been there before. You know, too much of a punk to kind of like step out on faith and deal with something of the unknown, something I'm not used to dealing with, you know, something that I don't know about. I'd rather deal with the pain sometime and say, well, you know, I'll get through it. Well, this last ordeal that I went through this last year, you know, I got stuck. I've been through a couple of cycles sitting down, going it over with one sponsor I had for the first 5 years and the last sponsor twice a cycle of the steps with him. And, you know, I can give real good information. I could tell you, you know, basically what I think because I really don't try to give too much direction. You know, I can give my experience. But when the shoe is on this foot, that's when, you know, I get stuck. You know, I did not know how to stop the pain this last year. And I can tell somebody else, well, you need to look at this step or you need to do, you know, why don't you do this? You know, and I went to my sponsor. And he said, you know, he always say, like we always tell our sponsees, did you pray? I said, man, I prayed. I'm praying in the morning. I'm praying in the afternoon. I'm praying all the time. He said, all right, what else? I said, I'm praying, man. I'm lining myself up. He said, well, Rob, you're missing the point. There's something that goes along with prayer. It's called meditation. You can pray all you want to, but if you ain't listening to the answer, all you doing is praying. So I was like, yeah, prayer and meditation, love, okay. You know, because I had forgot. And the pain lifted. And when I got out of that pain, it wasn't something that was noticeable to other people. It was an internal hurt. Like I felt July 9th, 1990, sitting in that apartment, wanting to die. Had a piece, had a couple other weapons, but couldn't take my life. Couldn't do it. That's how I felt with that hole in my soul at that point and didn't want to be around no more. That's the pain I felt. And I could sit here and say, oh, it wasn't about using. Trust. I said, my name is Rob and I'm an addict. It's always about using. Whether I know it or not. That's when it got me. When I take my eyes off of it, when I get this thing, you know, take my eyes up off of it and say, well, I'm working on me. I'm doing this. And I ain't even think about using. Yeah. You know, because what comes with anger for me is Thunderbird. I'm from Philly. We ain't do the richest thing. You know what I mean? Like my brother call it, the wine without grapes. You know what I mean? That's what comes with me. So it starts with a drug with me. And the drug don't necessarily have to be a certifiable drug. It can be a character of defect. And that's what had got me. And it had me wrapped up. And I couldn't see. And I didn't know how to get out of it. And I was lost. So what I had to do was like pray and meditate. And once I did that, the pain eased for a second, whereas though I could go into some other avenues of correcting what that source of that hole. You know, my wife's not here, right? She's back at home. Matter of fact, I believe she's at the doctor right now. And in August, she was coming home from work. And she hadn't been sick in a while because in 98, she was diagnosed with renal cancer and had 7 operations in 1 year. You know what I mean? And they operated on her and got rid of the renal cancer. And she'd been going back and there's been no reoccurrence. There's been no reoccurrence. And she was coming home from work August 25th on a Monday from up in Bethesda coming to Landover where we live. And she had a seizure behind the wheel in rush hour traffic. And she was doing about 60 miles an hour. And she was in the left lane. And the traffic was bumper to bumper. I mean, they was just rolling. And she came all the way to the side and did not hit another car. Hit the guardrail on the side of the road, got out the car, having the seizure, and didn't walk in the traffic. Walked around the front of the car and laid on the ground and continued to have that seizure for another hour. And that's where they found her at. So if you don't believe... if you don't believe there's a God, use mine, because he's awesome. I mean awesome. And I went up there. When they called the house, I wasn't even supposed to be home at that time. I had started my own business, so I didn't have hours to work. You know, I didn't know that when you start your, I thought I was looking at the good thing of having your own business, you know, like money. But I didn't know you had to work for it and work a whole lot of hours. And you get done when you get done. And I was home early and they called me from the emergency room. They said, your wife's been in a small accident. You need to come to the emergency room. And I wanted to ask some more questions. And they didn't have any answers for me. And I went up there and they said, can you talk to her? And I started talking to her, and she didn't wake up. So I lost it, and I went out in the parking lot, and I called my mother, because, you know, she got that fire and brimstone God, right? And she called my Aunt Mary from Brooklyn, right? Because, you know, she got that holy water when you go over her house, right? You know, and they got on the phone and I talked to them and they said, and we prayed. And then she said, they both said, why don't you go back in there and tell her that you love her? And you know, you hear about stuff people say and it seemed to be spiritual and you're like, yeah, that's spiritual. But when you dare to witness it yourself, can't nobody change my mind about nothing. At this point, because when I walked back in that emergency room and held her hand and told her that I love her, she woke up. You know what I'm saying? You talking about blowing me away. She woke up. And we talked. And the next morning, they found out she had a brain tumor and they had to do brain surgery. So on the 28th, on that Thursday, she went into brain surgery. And it was benign. Not can't benign. I get it mixed up, you know, and they removed it. And 2 months later, she was back at work. January, they tried to take her off this medicine and she had another seizure. March, they tried to take her off this medicine last month and she had another seizure. It's time to leave the darn medicine alone, you know. So I came down here, and it was almost time for me to speak, and I got nervous because my wife is not here with me. And any time I come to Ocean City, my wife is always with me. She's always, and I felt the separation. I felt like something was missing. And I was standing out front, and the tears started to come down. And I made some phone calls and I couldn't reach her. And, cause she told me to come anyway. She said, the kids would take me to the doctors. It's rough, but it's real. And the powerlessness on my part, you hear about other people going through stuff, but when it hits home and you gotta be the person there that cannot do a darn thing. I wish I can put it about 6 feet, 160. I can deal with it, but I can't. I can't put it in the size to get with it, because it's a feeling at night when nobody's around, when she's crying, and I can't do nothing in this world to change it. I get mad. I get angry. I feel so low. I'm working on integrity. That's what I'm working on. Integrity. You know what I mean? Because no matter what, I can't use, I got to be there. I'm going to share this. When I first came in, I was real, real anxious about recovery. Real anxious. You know what I mean? I mean, hardcore. Made people sick with me. You know how you get those ones with the book that be waiting to give you a ticket? I was the one with the book and had a whole, I had the tickets already filled out. I just had to hand them out to who they belong to. You know what I mean? Because I read some traditions and my sponsor made me go to tradition meetings and, you know, I was into it. And you're going to do it right. I got to do it right. You need to do it right. I wasn't going to let you have your process because we all need to do this together. You know, and then somebody say something and my special words was, I ain't in the business of killing newcomers. That was what I would say. You know what I mean? I still feel that way somewhat, right? But I had this meeting. Excuse me, see? There was a meeting I used to attend. Right? And I was chairing the meeting. And, you know, at the end, when they say that prayer that everybody's having a problem with, right? And I decided that I was no longer going to say it, but I also decided that you no longer was going to say it. So when I went to close the meeting, I said, can we close it with the serenity prayer only? They was like, blasphemy. What do you think you doing? You know, they closed it. But the next week, they had a special group conscience for me. And there was people that came back to that meeting I haven't seen in 5 years. Like, with torches, let's burn the witch. You know. And I had to get in touch with something. If the group vote on something, I need to follow it or leave it alone. And if I don't agree with it, I don't need to get on my soapbox. I need to just not do it myself. And then somebody will come to me and say, why don't you do it? And I'll tell them, why don't you read this? You know what I mean? Because I tried to change something because of what I believed in. The consequences of our actions is I created diversity in that meeting. While I was waving the sixth tradition, I was stepping all over the first tradition. Causing adversity and making people choose sides in a meeting. So who am I helping or who am I hurting? You know what I mean? A lot of times we can say we doing the traditions and we upholding this, but you know, you got to do it in a loving, caring way. There's a way to do it. Just, I mean, what was I doing? You know, trying to say I know and you don't. You know what I mean? That's why I learned that when I first came in, my sponsor said, look, stop saying all that stuff behind your name. Cause you know, I was new and I knew that I wanted to stay clean. So I would say, well, I'm an addict and such, and I can't do it. And I can't. He said, look, you need to know all that. Write it down, put it in your wallet and read it sometime. We need to identify in, not out. Everybody's the same. No big eyes, no little U's. Everybody's the same. You're not unique. So I had to learn that early on. Because people ask me, well, how you doing? I say, well, I'm doing fine one day at a time. I'm trying to work this thing. And, you know, I had a big, long spill to go along instead of just saying I'm doing okay or I'm not doing okay. I just wanted to stay clean, y'all. I just wanted to stay clean no matter what. And I never done this before, so I didn't know how. I didn't know how. So I'm glad to be in Narcotics Anonymous. But we got to watch the consequences of our actions, because we hurt people without knowing we hurt them. And sometimes it's for grandstanding. I had 5 minutes 5 minutes ago. Now I have zero. That's what she wrote on the paper. So I don't know. Hopefully somebody got something out of what I shared. Thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to thank Rob for sharing. Now I'd like to introduce our second speaker. That's Paul C.
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Paul. And I'd like to thank this committee, the CNP region, the Tri-County, which is where I got clean at back in January 17th, 1986. This one? All right. You know, and when Greg emailed me this topic, the consequences of my actions, I had a whole list of stuff I could tell you about. I got clean, like I said, January 17, 1986. And when I first got here, I was real compulsive. You know, give me a job and I want 20 jobs. You know, and I tried to be Mr. N.A. when I got here. That's what I wanted to be. I wanted everybody to like me, because that's the way it was on the street. You know, I had to do it the same way that I lived on the street, which is I had to do it for you to accept me. Because I didn't realize that you accepted me just the way who I was. I didn't know that. I thought that I had to do it all so you would know my name and everything would be okay because you would like me. Because that's all I really wanted to do when I got here, is you could like me. You know? And I wanted to stop using because I couldn't do it anymore. You know, what got me here was, you know, and I always tell my bottom, because it's real touching for me. You know, my bottom is being in my house with my two little girls laying in bed and a shotgun in my hand and want to kill them and me too. You know, and by the grace of God, somebody said to me, once you pull the trigger, who's going to reload it and shoot you? And so that never happened. You know, and that's when I knew that this deal was over for me. You know, because when I got here, I had no reservations. I knew that that was over and that I couldn't live that way no longer. So when I went into treatment, you know, I didn't care what I had to do. I just wanted to do it. I didn't know how I was going to do it. Didn't know how I was going to get it done. But what I did hear in my first meeting was a guy talking about recovery. And that's what I wanted. You know, when I got out, I jumped right into service work. But what I didn't know is that I was being arrogant about it. You know, that I used it for the wrong purpose. I used some of it for the wrong purpose, you know, because I wanted you to like me, so I took on every job that they had. They even created a job for me in Northern Virginia. They made me a liaison to all the different areas in the CNP region when I first got clean. And I drove everywhere because I wanted you to know who I was. I really did. And my sponsor say, he used to ask me, what are you doing this for? I'm an NA member. I should do it. I should do whatever you ask me to do. That's what you tell me. I should never say no. I should always do it all. And that's what I did, you know, for a long time, until I had to sit down and write about it, until I had to sit down and do an inventory of me, and I found out what it was all about, that it was my arrogance and my ego that was doing it. You know, there was only part of it that was part of recovery, and the rest of it was my ego that was challenging me. Because I had to be what I was. I couldn't let that go. I had to have that ego still sit out here and still be me. Until I really found out what an addict really was. you know. And when I had to sit down and do an inventory, and I had to realize what it was all about for me, is when I had to let that go. And I had to find out what my motives were for doing what I was doing. You know, and then I had to work on things like that, like letting that ego thing go. And that wasn't easy for me. You know, that was real hard for me when I first got here. You know, because I wanted to be a known person. Because that's all I really wanted in life, was people to like me and to accept me. And it took me a little while, it took me a while to understand that. That when I got here, you all loved me and you cared for me no matter what I've done. You know, taking the consequences for my actions, you know, and I had to do that. I had to, see, because I was the kind of person that when I went to a lot of meetings, you know, they tell you to do 90 and 90. Well, you know, I had to double and triple all that, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm compulsive. That's me. That's what I do, you know. But the thing that I used to do is I used to talk about you. I used to listen, because my thing was I was into that listening to the women talk about who they did and how they did it and who they did it with and which way they did it, upside down and around. And I could go to the over to where the coffee store was and sit there and talk about you. She goes, I love that. I love to talk about you until it hurt somebody. Until it got back to the person that I was talking about. And it hurt their feelings real, real bad. You know, and it almost drove them out the door. Because they thought that what they shared in the meeting was going to stay there. They didn't know that it was going to go out there and be talked about the whole time. You know, and that really hit. That's when things took stride for me, taking care of my consequences in this fellowship. You know, because when I had to sit down with that young lady and tell her what I had done, that I was the person that had said that, and I had talked to her, and I had to sit down face to face and make amends to her, and I could see the pain that was in her eye, it was not easy to do. You know, and that made me look at myself one more time. You know, that I have to be the person that I really always wanted to be, which was just a caring and loving person. And I had to let all that other garbage go. You know, that's when the process started for me, about a year or so into recovery. You know, because it took me that long, because I'm hard-headed. It took me that long to understand that. You know, and when I started working on myself and I started changing, things really started changing for me. Things fell into place. You know, because and it didn't matter what I came in here and shared, what really got me was when I did it, and you all, every time you would say, it would just say, keep coming back, we love you. And you would hug me every time I'd leave the door. You know, and after a while, that took a toll on me. That made me understand that all you really want to do is help me. That's all you really wanted to do, was just help me stay clean and do whatever I had to do and whatever you could do for me. You know, so when I would go to meetings, I would have to look at myself on what I was doing in that meeting. You know, see, because in school I was the class clown. You know, because I didn't want to learn. I just wanted to aggravate you. You know, so I had to learn. I had to go to meetings, and I had to learn not to be the class clown in the meeting and sit down next to you and talk and cut up with you. You know, that somebody in that room was trying to hear the message of recovery. And really, it was me that should be listening. Because there's not one person in the room that couldn't help me in my recovery. You know? And there are some days that I do that. I still sit there and talk to the guy next to me. You know? Not realizing that the person that's sitting on the other side of me is probably trying to hear what I'm saying and not listening to the person that's speaking. You know? It's the consequences of my actions that I have to look at in all aspects of my life. You know? Because I used to always think that it's how you treat me is how what makes me feel good. You know, it took me a little while to understand it ain't got that ain't got nothing to do with it. It's how I treat you is how I'm going to feel today. See, because if I treat you with caring and loving and respect and the dignity that you are looking for, I can go home and I can lay my head on my pillow and I'm going to sleep okay today. You know, and that's what I try to do every day. I just want to give you the respect that you deserve. Whether you give it to me or not, I should not have to retaliate to that. You know, I don't have to just turn around, if you don't treat me with respect, and turn around and be nasty to you. That's not what life is for me anymore. You know, because I did do that. I did that quite a bit. You know, in the beginning, if you shrugged me off and you didn't want to speak to me and you didn't want, you know, I'd shrug you. You know, it's not about that, because I have to realize sometimes people are going through things that they just don't even realize what they're doing. And I got to love them anyway. And I have to treat them with the daily respect that they deserve, that everybody deserves. You know, and I'm not just, you know, and that's out there in life for me. You know, it's how I act is when I go home and I do that little pamphlet, Live in the Program, you know, that I have to sit down and do my little inventory and I have to think, what did I do today? Did I harm anybody? Did I steal anything? Did I do anything that was disrupting? Did I do anything that was disrespectful? What do I need to do to work on that? And that's all I try to do each day. You know, at my job, the people that I intervene with during the day, the people in meetings, whether, you know, because I used to love to go to places and just act like a fool. You know? And what it did was it shows other people that, you know what? That, you know, I'm not sure what it showed, what tells you when I'm acting like a fool, what it says about me. Because I used to say, I don't care what they think about me. That's baloney. That's really baloney. I do care what you think about me. You know, I used to say, I don't care what they think. I'm doing what I have to do. Well, you know what? If I'm going to go out that door and I'm going to act like a fool, I do care what you think about me. You know, because I didn't come into this program to act like a ding-dong. I really didn't. I did in the beginning, but after a while I learned that, you know what, I really have to learn how to respect things. I have to treat people the exact same way that I want to be treated. You know, because if I give you that respect, eventually you're going to give me that respect back. You know, and it happened, it's happened over and over and over for me. And one story that I usually tell is, when I first got clean in Virginia, I went to this job. They told me to quit my other job, and I went to this place where I didn't have a clue what I was going to do. They just, this guy in recovery helped me get a job. And I would go to this job, and there was a guy working there that I used to speak to. His name was John. And I would say, good morning, John. And everybody used to tell me, there's no sense speaking to him because he don't talk to nobody. He doesn't talk to a soul. He don't help you. He don't do nothing for you. He don't speak. Just leave him alone. And every morning, I would go in there and I would say, good morning, John. And it went on and on and on. And 6 months later, one day I was over at this machine working and he came over to me and he said, good morning, Paul. And me and him became real good friends. And we used to do a lot of stuff together. We went scuba diving together. We went bike riding together. We ended up being real close friends. All because I spoke to him every day. I never forgot him. You know? So I know that as long as I keep doing the footwork and keep working on myself and giving you what you deserve, eventually it's going to rub off. So how I act in meetings and what I do in meetings, because if I come in here and I act like a fool, eventually you're going to act like a fool. That's the truth. We follow real well around here. Trust me. I know for a fact. I follow real well. You know? And so when I have to, I got to look at what I do in respect of what I want done. You know, when I go to meetings, how I act in here. You know, and And when I'm sitting down in a group conscience, or I'm at a regional, or I'm doing stuff and I make suggestions, you know, not turn into a raving maniac just because somebody doesn't agree with what I do or what I have to say. I had to understand that you have an opinion, I have an opinion, and eventually there's a solution to all of it. It might not be my solution, but somewhere there's a solution to every problem. And I know that for a fact today. And it might not be where I'm going to get to, you know, and it might not be the one I want to see. But I know that with every problem, there comes a solution if I'm willing to be open-minded to things that are being said to me. You know, that's all I have to do. All I got to do, you know, just like Rob was sharing, you know, once I pray, I got to sit there and I have to listen. And I have to listen to what the God of my understanding is going to tell me the answer is going to be. See, because when, like I said, when I first got this email and I saw what the topic was, and then he told me it was on the fourth tradition, I was trying to figure, how did that relate? How does the consequences of my actions relate to the fourth tradition that each group is autonomous? And what it relates to is the way I act in this meeting. That's what it relates to, my actions in this meeting and my consequences that'll come along with it if I don't give this meeting the respect that it deserves and the people that are in it. You know, because I know that everybody in here has something to share, and they have it, whether I think it's irrelevant or whether whatever I think has nothing to do with what you share. That I know that you're sharing because that's what you need to share. And if I cut you off, that's my ignorance. Because somewhere in your message, and I've learned this over the years, that no matter who it is, there's something in everybody's message that I can take out that door and I can use later. And it took me a while to understand that. That no matter what it is, because right now I get all of my best information from the new people. I do. Because they make me remember what it was like 18 years ago when I got here, because it ain't no different when I got here and you got here. I still got the same feelings. I can still remember those same feelings when you bring them up. I let myself feel you. When I hear somebody share pain, when they share that pain, I can feel it because it takes me back to where I was in that same situation, because my first sponsor always said, no matter what I go through, somebody's already done it. And I didn't know that, you know, because when I was going through some stuff at my house, in my home, you know, I was about 12 years clean and I was going through a lot of pain in my home. And what I would do is I would go to meetings and then I would go play pool at the bar. And I did that for 2 years, and I was miserable. And I wasn't telling anybody. I wasn't doing nothing. And I wanted to die. I absolutely wanted to die for 12 years clean, you know. And I finally shared about it. And a guy came up to me, and he said, that's okay. I had 18 years clean. I wanted to pull the trigger. And me and him sat down, and we cried, and we talked about it. And he understood exactly what I was going through. See, because what happened was I let my time and my arrogance get to me. Because it told me that you got this much time and you can figure it out on your own. You got it. You don't have to share that with anyone. You can figure it out. You're good at that. You can figure it out. And the whole time I was dying. Until I had to let it go, you know? And when I went to a meeting and I shared about it, and people were like, huh? What? It's like, I didn't tell you. And somebody came up to me. They had like 30 days clean, and they were talking to me. And they said, you know, I'm not sure if that's where I want to go to. I'm like, I didn't understand what they were saying. They said, I don't know if I want to get 12 years clean and die. And I said, I don't either. And me and this person, we got to talking, and we sat down, and we talked quite a bit. And I said, you know what? You don't have to. I said, all you have to do is remember the basics. You just share whatever you want to share. You go to a meeting and you share whatever you think you need to talk about, or you grab somebody, you talk, whatever you want to do. And you won't have to. And you definitely won't have to, you know. And those were my consequences of my actions in this fellowship, you know. And that's what I've learned. You know, how do I present myself going to conventions? How do I present myself when I'm at work? How do I present myself? What do I do? You know, and a lot of times I got to take the inventory on myself on still on what am I doing this for? Is it my ego? Is it my arrogance? Or is it because I really, truly respect who I am today? And most of the time, it's because I respect myself today. I really do. I respect who I am and what I stand for today. You know, because I didn't go through what I've been going through just to be an idiot. You know, I worked real hard in my recovery to try to learn how to respect myself every day and to be able to respect you and be the kind of human being that I've always really wanted to be. And I was just a caring and loving person. You know, that I can look you in the eye and tell you that I really care about you today. And I care about what you do today. You know? And it wasn't like that before, and everybody knows that. You know, when we were running the streets, and had nothing to do with respect. Zero. Zero amount of respect. It was how many times could I beat you for whatever it was I was trying to get, and then didn't care what the responsibility was. Whether you took a pop shot at me or whatever you wanted to do. And you know what? I'm not trying to live that lifestyle again. And so what I had to do was, like I said, is I had to learn how to respect me and you and how I treated you in and out of this fellowship. See, because now everything that I, you know, the three things that I do every day, you know, is I always wake up in the morning and I thank God for letting me take another breath. And I always help another human being, whether it be in or out of this program, always. And when I go home, I lay my head on my pillow and I thank him for just giving me a roof over top of my head to let me sleep under, because there were some days it wasn't there, you know. And, I had to learn a lot of different things about my actions in recovery. See, because I always wanted to tell you about yours. And I always wanted to tell you how you were acting and what you weren't doing and how you should act and how you, because I'm going to tell you exactly what your program should be made of. You know, because I know, you know, I know what's good for you. I really do. The problem was I didn't know what was good for me until I had to sit down and do an inventory and find out exactly what was good for me. And everything that I was telling you to do is what I should have been doing. Because I really wanted to do it, I just didn't know how to do it. You know? I didn't know how for you all to dress. I was telling you. The problem is I wasn't doing the same thing. I wasn't walking the walk. I was talking it. But my steps weren't recording that. You know, and it took me a little while to do that. And today I can actually look at myself in the mirror and say, you know what? You're okay today. You know, I have not harmed anybody in a long time. I haven't done anybody wrong in a long time. I haven't picked up your pocketbook in a long time. I haven't pushed you on the ground in a long time. I haven't done a lot of things that I used to do in a long time. And it's all because I've looked at the consequences of my actions in this program. You know, because I don't want you to hide from me. I don't want you to dish me. I don't want you not to hug me. I don't want you not to say I love you. I don't want none of that. I want that in my life today. And for me to get that, I got to turn around and give it to you. And I have to give it to you with 100% of purity. That was the other thing I had to learn in this program. That I could not be fake to you. I could not come up and tell you that, oh, I love you. Oh, hug you. Send you home. Because people can tell when you hug them whether you mean it or not. I learned that. See, because I used to only love to hug the women until my sponsor told me I couldn't do that anymore. You know, I've done a lot of things, you know, to work on, because my sponsor made me stand at a door and shake a lady's hand and hug a man. That was not in my vocabulary, to hug a man. I didn't want to do that because of the reputation. But you know what? I can hug a man in a bathroom now today and not even think twice about it. You know what I mean? Now, think you could do that when you were using? I could hug the bowl, but I wasn't hugging a man. You know what? Today, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with hugging a man and looking him in the eye and telling him that I love him. Meaningfully. Because that's the kind of relationship that I have here today. I don't have a problem with it. I used to. I had to work on it. Because my motives were a lot different for hugging a lady than they were for hugging a man. And my sponsor pointed that out to me real fast. Why is it that you squeeze them and you barely even get close to the man? Why do you think? He goes, okay, then you don't hug women no more until you learn how to hug a man. And I learned real fast. Because I had to take the consequences for my actions in this program. What were my motives? What did I actually want to do? It was real simple. What I really wanted to do. Until I learned how to do different. You know? And it's because I had people in my life that could point things out to me and show me my actions in here. And then I had to take responsibility for them. You know? Whether I come in this room and if I throw a chair across the room, I still got to take responsibility for what I do. You know? And a lot of that stuff wasn't easy. That is not an easy thing to do. Because when we get here, we're not really responsible for those kind of things. I wasn't. I don't know about you. But my actions, I was not responsible for. You know, I did it to survive. And what I learned is I didn't have to survive here. I could live with some peace of mind. I could live with my heart not throbbing every day. I could live with not laying up against the wall every day with my back to it because I knew that you were going to do something nasty to me. I could sit and not turn around all the time looking around. You know, always turning my head wherever I was sitting. I didn't have to do that when I got here. You know, it wasn't like that in the beginning because I still thought you were after me. You know, because, you know, the first few times I went to meetings, I used to always think that they were narc at you. You know, I thought you all were just waiting for me to share something so you could arrest me again. You know, that's the way I felt. You know, I had to learn. And you all taught me these things. And for that, I'm real grateful for what you all have showed me in my recovery and all the things that you've pointed out, whether they be good or bad, that I could work on every day. Because that's all this has been. It's a process for me day for day. Because each day somebody shows me something different in my life that I can work on. Because when I stopped working on it is when I wanted to die. Because my addiction told me, my disease said, you're okay, you can handle it. Come to find out, I couldn't, and I almost did. You know? And I was fortunate enough to be able to do what I had to do, not to die. And I was to take some more suggestions and listen to somebody and do what I needed to do in this program. You know? Because your consequences, the things that you do in this program will show up in somebody else. Because if you have sponsees and you act like an idiot, you know what's going to happen? When your sponsee starts acting like an idiot and you tell him that he's acting like an idiot, guess what he's going to say? This is what you do. Why can't I do this? And it's not that parent thing. Do as I say, not as I do. That don't go here. That does not go here. You know, do it, you know. That's what my parents used to tell me. You know, do as I say, not as I do. Well, that don't work here. It didn't for me. You know, I had to see what you all were doing, and I had to follow that. When I see people loving each other and caring for each other and doing what the and being respectful and doing all that, that's what I do. You know, that's the way my life is now. And that's because you all taught me these things over the years to be like that. You didn't teach me to be a knucklehead. You didn't tell me to come in recovery and act the same way I did on the outside. You told me I had to change, and I had to change it all. And that's not easy to do. It took me a little while to do all that. You know? But you know what? I got nowhere to go, and I got plenty of time to work on it. As long as I know that I can come in here and I can share about it, and I can tell you what I did, and every time you'll stand up and you'll say, keep coming back, we love you. And that's what you told me before. And I haven't heard any different since I've been coming around. No matter what it is I've ever come in, as long as I come in here and share it, you'll tell me that. If I don't, you usually just hug me and send me out the door. Because you don't know what's going on with me, because I'm not telling you. You know, and that's going to reflect my actions the next time, because if I keep it inside, I'm going to come in here and be nasty. And my actions in here and my attitude will show up when I don't share what's going on in my life with you. Eventually it will, because it'll build up inside for me, and I'll say something nasty to you, or I'll do something against the ordinary for me. And when somebody says, what's going on with you? Nothing. You always know when there's something going on with somebody when they go, nothing. You ever notice that? I'm fine, nothing. Okay, let me know when the pain's too great and you want to share it with me. Nothing. You know? I used to think I was fooling you when I said that. Nothing's going on. Nothing. All it did was prolong the agony. And my sponsor would be there waiting for me to fall. He'd be like, are you done yet? Are you ready? You're going to share it? Are you ready? Nothing. Okay, call me tomorrow. You know? And then I would dump and cry. He goes, oh, you're ready? Yeah, I'm ready. You know, and that's the way it is for me. You know. Uh-oh, I got the 0 minutes. Oh, wait a minute. No, I got 5 minutes. Oh, oops, zero. So, with that, the only thing I can tell you is, if you keep coming back and you keep sharing what's on your mind, it will get different. I love you.